Saga Egmont presents Taken by Monty Marsden and read by Leighton Pugh. Let's go outside. I want to see the moon. Are you happy now, Jack? Are you satisfied? It's so different here, so much bigger, brighter. You didn't answer me. The whole sky looks closer. His breathing had only just returned to normal. We had to do it, Fox. Did we? We can't do without it, you know that. It's just in our nature. Speak for yourself, it's not in mine. All I know is that it's always a risk, and this time it was even more of a risk than all the others. Let's go outside. In this state? For Christ's sake, Jack, use your head. We can't. It's black, shiny in the moonlight. Did you ever notice that, Fox? It's alive with its own luminescence. I want to enjoy this blood we've got on us. Let's go outside, just for a few minutes. No one'll see us. Part 1. Chapter 1. The Alitalia Boeing 747 had begun its final descent to Hartsfield International in Atlanta a few minutes earlier. The passenger looked out from the window of the sea of white clouds below, obscuring the ground. He had left Milan Malpensa over 10 hours earlier, after having exchanged a final email with the United States the day before. During the long intercontinental flight, he hadn't slept for a single minute, nor eaten or drunk anything, or looked at a book or a magazine. He had sat motionless, locked inside his thoughts and waiting for the journey to end. When, with a little turbulence, the Boeing began to pass through the clouds and for about 15 seconds everything disappeared into a thick fog, he began to feel anxious. Or rather, he began to feel the vague fear that came over him with every takeoff and every landing. He could see the ground beneath him now, green fields and trees, broken up by roads and tracts of houses that became increasingly clear as the plane lost altitude. The sun and the blue sky above the clouds had vanished, replaced by rain, the real intensity of which he couldn't assess. The vibration of the undercarriage being lowered increased his anxiety. The plane banked gently one last time to align itself with the runway, and the passenger closed his eyes and waited for the aircraft to make contact with the ground. He finally reopened them and breathed a sigh of relief only when the reverse thrust of the jets was already closing the Boeing's progress along the tarmac. As the plane taxied slowly along before eventually coming to a halt, he adjusted his watch to local time, 15:26, 2 minutes before the scheduled landing time. Not long now, and he would know if the journey had actually been worth making. He'd always been one step ahead of us, always, right up until that last damn day. After several days of intense cold, it was unusually mild in Milan that evening. Commissioner Sensi and Dottoressa Manara, the director of the Labanov, the Forensic Anthropology and Dentistry Laboratory, sat in a crowded bar in the Navigli area, a glass of Lagavulin on the table in front of each of them. It had been 2 years and 2 months since Giacomo Riondino had disappeared, leaving behind him the charred corpses of his accomplice and of Greta Alfieri, and this was the first time since then that Sensi had talked to anyone about the whole atrocious story. 2 years during which Sensi had never forgiven himself for letting the man escape when he thought he'd had him in his grip, for not having saved Greta, and above all for not managing, during all that intense manhunt, to understand. To see what was right in front of his face, and would have allowed him to stop Riondino before he'd left that trail of blood behind him. The commissioner took a deep breath. He always knew that sooner or later we'd catch up with him, but he had a plan, and every time we took a step forward, he'd already taken one himself. Sensi hesitated a moment before concluding bitterly, "We've only got ourselves to blame. We always gave him enough time to make that step."
You did nearly catch him.